Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hi, everybody. This is a special Brian Lehrer Show podcast presentation, The People's Guide to Power, Queen's Machine Edition. You know, one way to look at the election of Donald Trump is that it served as a call to political action for ordinary people seeking more of a say in the way the government operates. But here in New York, September's primary showed that elected office is still very much an insider's game. Incumbents won every single race they ran, reinforcing a populist sentiment that gained traction among both Republicans and Democrats, culminating in Trump's victory, right? The system is rigged. Now, WNYC City Hall and Politics reporter Bridget Bergen has been exploring why, in this age of activism, the odds remain so incredibly stacked against newcomers to the political system. She's been focusing on one particular organization, the Queens County Democratic Committee, otherwise known as the Queens Machine. Before we hear her report, I wanted to ask Bridget a few questions to put it all into context for you. Hey, Bridget.
Hey, Brian.
So this series of reports that we're about to hear breaks down how the Queens Machine operates and wields its power. What brought you to this topic?
Well, as we have talked about many times over this past year, I have a real interest in participation and how people who feel that their vote matters and that or that their vote doesn't matter, who feel engaged in the process or who feel left out of the process. And after the election of Donald Trump, I think there were a lot of people who were reflecting on those very issues and looking for new ways to have a voice in their community in a way that they maybe never have had before. And so that was my jumping off point. And the same day that Donald Trump was inaugurated, I went to a campaign school for women looking for someone I could spend some time with throughout the course of the year to follow their journey as someone who might consider running for office.
So why Queens? I mean, Brooklyn has more people, Manhattan has more money. Why Queens?
So at that campaign school, the woman who I met, a young woman named Kimberly Roberts, was from Springfield Gardens, which is in Southeast Queens. And through sitting down with her and the conversations we had, it started to make me more curious about how hard would it be to get involved in politics in Queens and navigate your way into this very powerful organization. So that was our jumping off point.
So without further ado, The People's Guide to Power, Queens Machine Edition, Part 1.
It's January 20th, 2017, Inauguration Day, as Donald Trump delivers his American Carnage speech, about 30 women gather in downtown Brooklyn for lessons in how to run for office.
Many of you know today is Inauguration Day.
No.
It is.
But catharsis kept interrupting the curriculum.
This calamity has happened because our party has failed us.
All we hear from the DNC is how to raise money.
We don't necessarily talk about the divisions that exist between us.
That last voice, that's Kimberly Roberts. She was sitting towards the back of the room.
I know that as a black woman, it was very painful to see that statistic that 54% of white women voted for Donald Trump. I'll just say that.
Democrats need to do some self-reflection, she said.
I take the train from Queens, and you can see the racial division as you travel through Queens.
A few days later, over plates of curried goat and fried calamari at her favorite neighborhood restaurant, Roberts tells me why she's thinking about a career in politics.
Well, there's nobody coming to save us. There's nobody coming in to do anything. So if we don't do it, it's not going to get done.
We're in Springfield Gardens, a mostly middle-class neighborhood in Southeast Queens, where she was born and raised. She's 36, NYU undergrad, a master's in education. What Roberts doesn't know is that in this borough, where they speak 130 different languages, the Democratic Party speaks largely with one voice, a powerful political machine that methodically protects its turf. She doesn't know about political clubs, pecking orders, or paying your dues. She's about to learn.
Do you want to get elected to public office?
Yes. Yeah. I haven't thought of another way. And maybe I'll discover it along this journey, but I haven't thought of another way.
Before the election, she was a Peace Corps volunteer in Guyana. While she was away, her mother told her something that she's been thinking about ever since.
She says, you're going to do great things. You're going to do a good job. Don't worry about that. But when you come back, bring all that you've learned back, because this is your country. She said, your father and I are Jamaican. You are an American. This is your country. So when you come back, you work and put your energy toward this place. And she was right.
Her Peace Corps assignment was cut short last fall due to a security threat. Roberts found herself back home at her parents' house just as Trump's Access Hollywood tape rippled across the media. So she recalibrated her plans. That's what campaign school was all about. Roberts says she was inspired when she left that day.
And I'm like, all right, well, you can moan and groan and gripe, or you can get up and do something.
She also met a woman there from her neighborhood who knows a few more rules about how the system works.
Well, I'm Adrienne Adams. I am the chairperson of Community Board 12 Queens.
That's where Roberts lives. It's the second largest community board in Queens, covering the neighborhoods of Jamaica, Hollis, St. Albans, South Ozone Park, and Springfield Gardens. Adams encouraged her to apply to be a community board member. You submit an application to the borough president's office on Queens Boulevard and hope for the best.
Okay, the next meeting of Community Board 12 will be right here on Wednesday, March 15, 2017.
I caught up with the two of them at a community board meeting back in February.
Adams, there. So good to see you.
Almost new member.
I know. Oh, well, we'll see.
Adams has been the chair for going on 5 years, and she's learned a few things along the way. Last year, she ran for state senate against an incumbent, James Sanders. She had the backing of the Queens County Democrats, the Queens machine. But she lost. Political watchers say she was just a pawn in a political chess game. The machine wanted to send a message to Sanders because he wanted to run against an incumbent who was higher up the ladder, Congressman Gregory Meeks. The machine doesn't like it when you mess with one of their own.
I'm going to see you on Saturday, right?
Yes.
Yes.
We're driving up together.
Yes, we are.
I'm excited.
Absolutely. We're going to the legislative caucus together.
That weekend, Roberts and Adams drove up to the annual gathering of the Black and Latino Caucus in Albany. It was a chance to schmooze with elected officials and power brokers from across the state. But something happened to Roberts on that drive. We caught up by phone when she got back, and she told me she still had questions rolling around in her head.
Whether I had the stamina to do it, whether I had the personality to withstand a lot of the politics.
She learned just how hard it is to break in.
You know, Adrienne raised an enormous amount of money. She had an enormous amount of backing. She did a whole lot with her campaign and still lost.
Because that's how power works in Queens.
You know, having to think about your own personal value system versus doing what is politically expedient.
I had lunch with Adams a few months later. She's a former corporate trainer with close ties to lots of institutions in her community, and she's been building her network for years.
Oh, it's tough. It's tough to penetrate what some call the Queens machine. Even, you know, as ingrained as I am in the community, it's a tough hurdle to try to penetrate what some deem as being their sandbox.
But Adams is playing the long game. You can hear it when she uses the insider's term for the machine. They call it county.
So Queens County has a role to play. I feel that in being a part of that quote-unquote family, especially since my run last year, that I'm in a very good place.
And sure enough, the next month, she got her chance. Former city council member Reuben Wills was convicted of corruption. The Queens County Democrats picked Adams to replace him on the ballot.
I'm just really excited about it. I'm grateful to have this opportunity, and I'm very grateful to Queens County and the Committee on Vacancies.
As for Roberts, she was turned down for that appointment to the community board. Neither she nor we could get an explanation why. She opted to go back to school to study urban affairs and volunteer for the Adams campaign. As for elected office,
definitely inspiring, but also still very much like, oof, there's a couple of hurdles. So that's the reality, but I'm not defeated.
Whether she knows it or not, she's starting to pay her dues. As for Adams, she won a tough primary in September, but faces little opposition in the general election. Another win for the Queen's machine.
Another win for the Queen's machine. Bridget, is this story in a way about how somebody wants to get into power via the machine, paying their dues?
Absolutely. I think part of what the reporting shows is there's not necessarily an easy way into these types of organizations. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. And we have this contrast between Kimberly Roberts, who is so inspired and has, you know, this perspective that she wants to bring to what it means to be represented, what it means to have your voice heard. But she's starting from the very beginning and learns about all of these obstacles that you encounter, whether it's, you know, just personally putting yourself out there or the money you have to raise. And it makes her rethink if she's ready to do the candidate-facing part of all of this. Maybe she wants to start as someone's staffer, or chief of staff. Right now, she's in school for public policy. On the other side, you have someone like Adrian Adams, who has been working her way, you know, into the system for years. She's already the chair of her local community board. She's been building her network within this community. She's got some very important organizations that she's tightly affiliated with, both religious and civic. So that when an opportunity opened up, was a logical person to tap. And that's so often how it happens. It's not like just because you want to do it, you can do it. It's almost like they need to see that you want to do it and choose you for that opportunity.
So they're still in charge.
Exactly.
In the piece, you mentioned that the machine constantly engages in what you call a political chess game. Now, we know that chess sets have queens, so in the queen's machine, does somebody actually play the king and the queen and somebody else has to serve as a pawn?
Well, there's certainly some very powerful people who are moving those pawns around the board. And part of what we learned in that is when you're new to the machine, when you're new to the game, you might not realize that you're a pawn. And that was, I think, part of the experience of this one candidate who now, you know, has gone on to run again for city council. But, you know, part of the reason that she was supported initially was as much, you know, as much as the machine thought that she was a good candidate, which I'm sure they did, they also wanted to send a message to this candidate, Senator James Sanders, who was considering a primary against Congressman Meeks.
So by running another candidate, they were really trying to put in check a more serious challenger to the incumbent?
Exactly.
Well, with that political chess game in mind, let's take a closer look at some people on the other side of the board, so to speak. It's kind of like tilting at windmills, but as we hear in part two of Bridget's report, there are people who fight the machine.
So you know that scene in that film The Matrix, where Morpheus tells Neo to choose between the red pill and the blue pill?
You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
The red pill is for the people who believe they're being manipulated by a system they can't control. When you visit Joanne and Donnie Whitehead to talk politics, you start down the rabbit hole by entering their garage in St. Albans.
Thank you so much for letting me come in and check out this war room. Do you ever call it that?
That's what everybody referred to it as.
The walls are plastered with old campaign signs and current election maps. Donnie Whitehead sounds a little like Morpheus when he explains his view on local politics.
In Southeast Queens, it's a private firm running a system, what we call the county machine.
His lingering drawl is from his childhood in North Carolina. He's in his 70s now. He's talking about the Queens County Democratic Committee and the people who run it.
I got involved in this stuff in 1958 back in the South. But the level of obstacles now is much more difficult. But that don't mean you can't do it.
We're also joined by his wife.
My name is Joanne Floyd Whitehead. I am currently supposedly retired.
She knows some people see them as troublemakers, and she doesn't care.
You know, so now don't come back and point at me and say I'm wrong because I'm frustrated. Point at yourself for letting me get to that position.
Donnie and Joanne are in battle with the machine. It's a fight to participate, to hold their elected leaders accountable. They help anyone they meet who wants to join forces with them.
I think literally everybody who on the outside of the machine have come here for assistance.
Right now, this is July, they're helping a new city council candidate go through the whole convoluted process of running for office. An easel displays a neat, hand-printed grid tracking the number of signatures they've collected for Anthony Rivers. You need to submit 450 valid signatures to get on the ballot.
You see the total count? 4,225. We try to do five times the number so they can't pull a lot of tricks.
Once they give you a line by line and say it's wrong, you have to be able to prove that it's right.
It's so much. It's just so many details.
All these details are the tools the machine uses to wield its power. They date back more than a century when they were used by men in bowler hats in the proverbial smoke-filled room. To this day, election lawyers call ballot access in New York a minefield. It's why candidates pay lots of money to consultants, lawyers, and campaign staff. Joanne and Donnie, they do it for a different reason.
In this system, without competition, it's never going to improve. You can't be locked out like that.
If you have people who have that much control, it's no longer about representing the community. It's about maintaining power.
So sign here.
I meet up later that evening outside of Walgreens in the district, where they were collecting more signatures. And here's their candidate, Anthony Rivers.
I'm just sick and tired of people being ordained into these positions, if you will, and then they get them, and then they do nothing for the community.
He seizes on a dispute over a couple of buildings on Hollis Avenue, where there was talk of opening a homeless shelter. There are already more homeless people sheltered in this part of Queens than anywhere else in the borough.
We're not against homeless people, I want to make that clear, but we're against the inequitable placement of these type of facilities in our area as opposed to spreading it throughout all of Queens.
Rivers and the Whiteheads blame their local elected leaders, who they say are more interested in looking out for themselves than their community. They point to four who were convicted of corruption in the last decade. That's right, you heard me correctly. In the last 10 years, four public officials from Southeast Queens have gone to prison. That's why the Whiteheads are out here gathering more signatures for Rivers, because just getting on the ballot is a challenge.
They don't want you on the ballot, they fight to keep you off, you know? It's an uphill battle all the way.
I sit down with the guy he's battling against, Councilmember I. Danique Miller. We're at one of his favorite lunch spots in the district, a juice and salad bar called the Energy Cafe. I ask him about Rivers and the Whiteheads, and he flips the question back at me.
Who are these folks working with? What are they doing? What is their background? What have they ever done for anyone other than themselves? So that's that, and I sleep well at night knowing that our community has been served.
Miller started off as a labor organizer and then president of the union representing Queens bus drivers. He caught the attention of a neighborhood power broker, and a few years ago, as so often happens in Queens, he got the tap on the shoulder to run for public office.
Councilman called me and says, hey, we need to have a meeting. I want to talk to you about politics, whatever.
Leroy Comrie preceded Miller in the council seat, and he planned to move on and run for Queens borough president. Miller figured that's what the meeting was about.
They're like, no, this is not that meeting. Well, what meeting is this? This meeting is about who's going to replace him. Oh, they're going to be lined up. Don't worry about it. You tell me who it is, and we'll get behind them. They said, no, we had a meeting, and we thought it should be you, right? I'm like, negative. I have a job. Not going to happen.
Comrie kept calling him, and eventually Miller decided to run. And the thing is, the machine did not back him that year.
I was a labor leader. I was a community activist who was working outside of local politics.
In other words, he had his own machine. But once you are elected, even outsiders become insiders. That's how the machine perpetuates itself. Miller is now on the party's executive committee, and Frank Bowles, the election lawyer who represents all the party regulars, is the attorney of record on Miller's petitions. Anthony Rivers made the ballot anyway. The Whiteheads won that battle, but the machine won the war. Miller beat Rivers by a sizable margin in the primary and faces little meaningful competition in the general election. Back at the Whitehead's war room, Donnie says they'll continue the fight. Hanging on the wall near the entrance, there's a framed document, a copy of the clerk's report from the time he challenged the machine's petitions and won.
He submitted 1497. They found 1,076 of them was bad. He only had 420 and he needed 500. So he was off. That's why I keep this on the plot. This is good work.
It's their red pill, just like in The Matrix. That thing that shows them another way is possible, even when you're taking on the machine.
You're listening to The Queen's Machine, a special Brian Lehrer Show podcast presentation, part of WNYC's People's Guide to Power series. I'm here with WNYC City Hall and politics reporter Bridget Bergen. We'll hear more from the series in a minute. But Bridget, the Whiteheads are still fighting the good fight in St. Albans. But we've now heard stories from several people who wanted to get involved politically, wanted to run for public office in order to better their communities, only to get defeated by the machine. How discouraged are these individuals when they find out what exactly running for political office entails?
I think it depends on the individual, but for folks who are really interested in making a difference in their community, I think they have to take the long view. And so even for some of the candidates who, you know, I profiled to went up against the machine and didn't win, a lot of those folks are people who will still stay involved in their community, in the issues that matter to them in different ways. And that's important. I think, you know, that's part of what the whole process of change is about. It takes time.
Well, Queens is this famously diverse and inclusive place, but clearly the insularity of the county Democrats is coming at somebody's expense. So who's being left out when it comes to Queens politics?
You know, that's a question that I've been thinking a lot about, in part because I don't think it's a simple answer. I don't think you can look at the organization and say they're leaving out certain racial or ethnic groups. Because it is such a diverse community, they've in fact tried to support people of different ethnicities for different positions. I think the answer is more complex because I think it stems from this idea of, well, who doesn't follow their rules? Who hasn't gone up through their club system? I think those are the people who are more often left out. You know, if you, in this case, were, you know, a Bernie Sanders supporter in 2016, or you supported someone else for the city council speaker in 2013, those are the issues that seem to matter in terms of who gets the next opportunity, who gets the support.
And Donna Brazile might have something to say about that.
I think so.
But now I want to know exactly how the machine operates and who runs it, and how did it get to be this way to begin with? Political machines can seem like a fact of life for many New Yorkers, like they were always there. But they, too, have their own exciting origin stories. So let's turn to Bridget's next report.
We're at a summer hearing of the New York City Board of Elections, downtown at 42 Broadway. And what you're about to hear is a pretty common experience around this time in an election year, but it also has a lineage that goes back more than a century.
Petition of Erica Montoya for City Council Member, 21st District. Any appearances?
Frank Bowles on behalf of the objector.
Frank Bowles is the lawyer for the Queens Democratic Machine. Erica Montoya is a potential spoiler in a Queens City Council primary, so he's objecting to her presence on the ballot, and she's fighting back.
You know, and I've spent pretty much since Friday, I've been at BOE offices.
Montoya is a first-time candidate, 35 years old. Her hopes rest with 10 elections commissioners, men and women, black and white and brown, one Democrat and one Republican from each borough. But they all have one thing in common. Under state law, they are the last and only officials at any city agency who are handpicked by the party bosses. We'll come back to this scene in a few minutes. But first, let's go back in time to see how we got here.
All right, line them up. It's election day!
Beginning with the city's original machine, Tammany Hall, depicted here in the film Gangs of New York. It was identity politics in its primal state.
And the division was between the native-born and the immigrants.
The city's Protestant founders against Catholic immigrants, mostly Irish. Terry Galway wrote a book about Tammany Hall called Machine Made.
And Tammany Hall is counting heads, and they're saying, do you know what? If we can embrace these people while the native population is scorning them, we will win.
The machine provided respect, maybe a job, and the kinds of social services that predated government entitlements, all in exchange, of course, for their vote. Reformers viewed it as a corrupt bargain, so they created new rules. First came petitions in the late 19th century. You didn't need the party bosses to get on the ballot anymore. You could collect signatures instead. And in the early 20th century, the first party primaries. Voters would choose the candidates, not the bosses. But then the machine figured out they had more votes. So picture this, July 4th, 1929. Thousands of people at the party's new headquarters, and WNYC is broadcasting it live, including Al Smith, a former governor and the first Catholic nominee for president.
On behalf of my brother sachems of the Tammany Society, that we here again today renew again our undying faith and loyal devotion.
But it all falls apart. Mayor Jimmy Walker is forced to resign in a corruption scandal, and of all things, he's replaced by a Republican.
I have been designated to lead the fight against Tammany Hall.
Fiorello LaGuardia, who defeated Tammany Hall to become mayor in 1934, he took aim at their most powerful tool, their patronage jobs, expanding the civil service system to hire workers based on merit, not their connections. Galway says the modern political machine is a much different creature.
When Tammany was at its best, it worked for the masses. When machines are corrupt or working poorly, they're usually working for the benefit of one or maybe a handful of individuals.
Fast forward to 1986.
A growing bribery and extortion scandal.
The appointment of judges, the awarding of cable TV franchise.
Manus resigned as Queens Democratic leader and borough president.
Manus committed suicide by stabbing himself with a kitchen knife in his Queens home.
Donald Manus was on the phone with his psychiatrist when he killed himself. His wife was on the extension upstairs. The guy who took over was a district leader and party official named John Sabini.
I was sort of the token reform Democrat.
He tries to rebuild the organization, so he leans on a couple of guys with lots of county experience, Michael Reich and Gerard Sweeney.
I brought them back as old hands who knew how to steady the ship.
Sabini doesn't know it at the time, but he's just installed the next generation of the Queen's Democratic machine. For 30 years, through various positions within the party's executive committee, Reich and Sweeney remain some of the most powerful figures in Queens.
If it was such a well-oiled machine, we wouldn't have primaries. We wouldn't have people running against each other.
That's Reich in a recent phone interview. And remember Frank Bowles, that election lawyer you heard at the top of this story? Sweeney, Reich, and Bowles are law partners based on Long Island, where they live and vote. They're also experts in the arcane parliamentary rules that govern the county committee meetings. Technically, there are 2,450 elected members of the committee, but they only appear on the ballot if there's a challenger. And right now, there are hundreds of vacancies. Usually, it's the party regulars who show up.
You've heard the motion dispense with the reading of the roll, and that the chair declare a quorum to be present.
This is who decides who becomes a candidate for judge and who gets the party's endorsements.
We will begin with the Queen's prima facie calendar.
And also, who serves as the Democratic commissioner from Queens on the Board of Elections.
I am running for New York City Council for District 21, and we are right now at the BOE offices at 42 Broadway.
Erica Montoya has spent all summer campaigning. Bowles is asking the board to knock her off the ballot.
I would just ask the clerk to report the move.
Second. All in favor? All
opposed? Montoya runs across the room. She didn't hear when they called her name,
Are you Erica Montoya?
She needed 450 valid signatures on her petitions, and she submitted 1,084. But the Board of Elections, and remember, they're controlled by the parties, has invalidated more than half of them, leaving her 22 signatures short. She's got one last chance to prove the signatures are good.
And I have over 30 that I can go line by line.
I
don't have the list. I can.
The problem is you have to come here ready with the list, with a copy for your opponent.
I understand. I was only able to get the county's clerk report yesterday.
Here's Bowles, the machine lawyer, blaming her for the delay.
I believe she didn't have a fax number on her cover sheet, and your rules are very specific that's one of the considerations. If you don't have a fax number...
But it doesn't say that it doesn't make me eligible. It just says that if you don't have a fax number, that you then have to go and pick it up in person, is my understanding.
She's pleading with them to preserve her candidacy. But the board is already making the motion again.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Wait.
All opposed? All abstentions?
The candidate will not appear on the ballot.
Wait, so I can't ask for more time, given that the fax
number... In the end, Montoya is beaten because she didn't have a fax number and she didn't bring a list to refute the tossed signatures. Records show that 38 council candidates were knocked off the ballot across the city this year, including 5 from Queens. The incumbents won every primary.
Well, Bridget, after hearing the incumbents won every primary, it's no wonder casual voters see the system as rigged. In your piece, you talk about Tammany Hall, the granddaddy of machine politics, and how they traded jobs and social services for constituent votes. Is there still a transactional model in place for the modern day machines? What do voters get for showing up at the polls in 2017?
It's an interesting question. It's certainly not the transactional model that existed under Tammany. And part of that is because it's not legal anymore, and for good reason. I think the transactional nature of how machines function now tends to do more with power. If there's any agency in the city that is representative of the last vestiges of the machine, it is the Board of Elections, because it is made up of people who have been appointed by party leaders via the city council, and is supposed to have this bipartisan makeup. I think for voters, the transaction is more about the incentive to turn out to vote and to have a voice, and to remember that even though you may see those same names on your ballot year after year, part of the reason that's able to happen is because not enough people are turning out to vote. So it's definitely a departure from the days of Tammany.
So in that respect, is the machine necessarily all bad? I think we tend to think of Tammany Hall in the stereotypical way of what it's come to represent, which is corruption. But it also did provide services to local communities, poor, low-income, immigrant, non-English speakers as natives, communities who didn't have a lot of power. And in a certain respect, it worked. And there are people who, in a certain respect, miss it in terms of serving people on the ground around the city.
Absolutely. Part of what was so fascinating about reporting this story was, you know, sitting down with the historian Terry Galway, who wrote a wonderful book called Machine Made, where he really makes this pretty compelling case that Tammany did serve this important purpose of bringing especially new immigrants into the political process. We don't have anything of that ilk anymore. I mean, there are local community organizations that try to do that. There's a group up in Upper Manhattan, Dominicanos USA, that's all about just registering new voters, bringing new voters into the process. But that's not something that necessarily the parties have adopted as something that is their mandate. And I think that's an important question to explore. If you have such depressingly low voter turnout in the city, and you know, it's an incredibly blue city that Democrats control, then why aren't, you know, organizations like the Democratic Organization in Queens responsible for trying to get more people involved in the process?
It's one reason there was so much pushback when Mayor Bloomberg try to change our electoral system so that it was nonpartisan.
Exactly.
And he thought it was good government so that people could run as individuals without ties to these machines, and that would seem very clean. But it's clean in the abstract. Political parties also serve a function on the ground, delivering services to their very local constituents. All right. Every political machine has a leader. These are the so-called bosses. And in Queens, that's Congressman Joe Crowley. He's the chairman of the House Democratic Caucus, and that makes him the fourth most powerful Democrat in all of Congress. Does he think the system is rigged? Let's pull back the curtain on the sources of his power and hear what he has to say in part four of Bridget's report.
Speaking of immigrant songs, a boy from Queens wrote.
Congressman Joe Crowley loves to perform, singing and playing guitar. At a recent fundraiser in Long Island City, even Mayor de Blasio joined him for a number. The video went viral. Just like Paul Simon, Joe Crowley is a Queens guy, born and raised. We're sitting at a large conference table in his district office in Jackson Heights. And right by the door, there's a framed photo of Crowley and three Democratic Party lawyers, Michael Reich, Gerard Sweeney, and Frank Bowles, posing with Governor Andrew Cuomo, another guy from Queens. For Crowley, like Cuomo, politics runs in the family.
When I was a young boy, I must have been 8 or so years old. I remember seeing a bumper sticker, and it was my name. It was Crowley. It was my Uncle Walter, but I put it on my knapsack going to school.
Walter Crowley's most ambitious race was for the seat his nephew holds now. It opened up in 1984 when Geraldine Ferraro stepped down to be the first woman on a presidential ticket. Uncle Walter lost to a guy named Tom Manton, who held the seat until 1999 and also became the boss of the Queens machine.
Tom Manton was an unspoken name in our household. It was a bad word. You couldn't say that name.
That's Crowley on the House floor after Manton's death in 2006. And if you listen carefully, you'll hear how political machines turn enemies into friends and how political careers are made.
But not long after that, Tom Manton tapped me on the shoulder at the County Cork Association dance on Greenpoint Avenue. And he said to me, how would you like to be the next assemblyman from the 30th Assembly District?
Crowley served in the assembly for more than a decade. And the next step shows how bosses reward talent and loyalty. When Manton retired, he arranged for Crowley to take over his seat in Congress. He used a section of state election law designed to fill a vacancy in case a candidate suddenly dies or something. It's a popular maneuver. It happened three times just this past summer, in the city council, in the state senate, and the state assembly. And when Manton died, Crowley also took over as the party boss. That's just a couple of reasons people say
the system is rigged.
The system is rigged.
The same rigged system.
Please welcome to the podium Representative Joseph Crowley from New York.
He forged a friendship with Hillary Clinton, and it grew stronger after the September 11th attacks. Crowley lost a cousin there, a battalion chief for the fire department, and Clinton was in the U.S. Senate fighting for federal aid. He fought for her in last year's election.
My fellow Democrats, my fellow Americans, I'm with her. I'm with Hillary.
Clinton lost, but Crowley's star rose. After the election, he was voted chair of the House Democratic Caucus, the fourth most powerful Democrat in the House. He's reaping the rewards, and so is his machine. Crowley has more than $1 million in his campaign account and another $500,000 in a PAC. And records show the party has more than $500,000 on hand. That's more money than at any time in at least a decade and more than every other borough committee by hundreds of thousands of dollars.
But I think the things that Donald Trump is doing now are unforgivable.
Crowley positions himself as a leader of the resistance. He's pro-immigrant, fought the repeal of Obamacare. But let me tell you about a guy named Steve Roth.
Where are you guys? Come here. Come up here, Steve.
That's President Trump giving a shout-out to Roth at a press conference this summer. Roth is head of Vornado Realty Trust, a major real estate investment firm. He's done deals with Trump and the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Here's Roth at a recent conference.
We are arguably the largest owner of property in New York.
He's also a major contributor to Crowley and the Queen's Machine. Since 2008, he and his company have given more and more to Crowley's campaign committee and PAC, a total of at least $40,000. And records show that just this year, Roth wrote a $10,000 check to the machine's housekeeping account. To be sure, Roth has spread his money around to many candidates, and the Queen's Machine's coffers are swollen with checks from the real estate board and construction unions. But Roth's is the largest individual contribution, and Queen's is the only county committee that got a check from him. His spokesman declined to comment. A spokeswoman for Crowley's campaign says they're using the money to elect progressive Democrats. She would not comment on Crowley's relationship with Roth.
You know, what I say about Donald Trump is that, yeah, I'm from Queens. He was born in Queens, but I grew up on the other side of the tracks. Our lives probably couldn't be more divergent.
The heart of Crowley's district was formed in the days when white Catholics, mostly Irish and Italian, were the dominant ethnic group. Today, the 14th Congressional District spans parts of Queens and the Bronx, and it's 50% Hispanic.
My name is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Crowley hasn't had a primary challenger in 14 years. Until now.
I am the progressive Democratic congressional candidate for New York's 14th district.
Ocasio worked for the Bernie Sanders campaign in the Bronx. She says Crowley is beholden to Wall Street and real estate interests and out of touch.
I'm always so surprised when Democratic insiders ask me how much money I have and they don't ask me how many volunteers I have. They don't ask me how many doors have you knocked on? How many phone calls have you made?
She also knows Crowley is protected by the inner circle of those three-party lawyers, Sweeney, Reich, and Bowles, with decades of experience in election law and guarding access to the ballot.
The way the Queens Democratic Party machine has worked, they operate on a politics of exclusion.
I asked Crowley what he says to people who see him surrounded by these powerful men and say the system is rigged.
Well, I think rigged is an interesting word to use when the judges in this county are elected by the people.
Which is true, but slightly misleading, since judicial candidates are nominated by the party. In a one-party town, voters don't have much of a choice at the polls.
If there's a desire to change that system, then that system needs to be changed. But as long as the rules are set forward, the Democratic Party as well as the Republican Party and other parties play by those rules.
And he has a few questions for anybody who thinks their voice is not being heard.
Do they belong to a Democratic club? Do they understand what a primary is? Do they know that it's not necessarily the end-all, that there is a general election? How sensitive is that?
In other words, whether you're just starting out in politics or in line to be the next Speaker of the House, you have to understand the machine. Bridget Bergen, WNYC News.
Now, Bridget, few places in the U.S. vote as reliably Democratic as Queens. Why is reform so slow to come to a place where voters self-identify overwhelmingly as reform-minded progressives?
You know, I think in part it's the people who turn out and the people who are targeted to turn out. We know that part of what makes an organization like the Queens Democratic County Committee so effective is that when they are backing their candidates, they are very precise about who they are targeting. You know, they are looking for the triple prime voter, the voter who turns out in every single election. And what then ends up happening is for people who are new to a community or people who are new to voting, those people are ignored. Their doors aren't knocked on. They're not getting the campaign mail. And I think when you have an organization where people are towing the line to some extent the way they do there, it becomes more difficult to reform because you're focusing on just staying in power.
And so, Bridget Bergen, after reporting the series on the Queens Machine for the WNYC Newsroom, do you feel like you've come to understand machine politics in a way that it affects everybody everywhere more than you did before?
Absolutely. What was so interesting and fun when I was working on these stories was talking to people from other parts of the city and hearing their stories about the machine that they encounter in their neighborhood, in their borough, you know, in New Jersey. There are so many parallels. People who have longstanding control of a certain organization, the same candidates who are repeatedly running, and a machine who has been controlling a system for a very long time. And it's not unique to Queens. They just happen to be the strongest and arguably the best at least in the city.
And that concludes this special Brian Lehrer Show podcast presentation of The Queens Machine. My great thanks to WNYC City Hall and Politics reporter Bridget Bergen, WNYC's Washington correspondent John O'Connor, and producer Rebecca Ibarra contributed reporting to the series. The People's Guide to Power was edited by WNYC Metro editor David Lewis, and this podcast was produced by Joseph Capriglione. Thanks for listening.